Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of July 1st. I'm John Gibson, and on a beautiful, soggy Saturday morning is Jim Allen with me in Tokyo. How are you doing, bud?
Well, we're both in Tokyo for a change. It seems like we've been bobbing around the world in Japan.
you more so than I.
Well, you did the, you know, you, John did the Nagoya thing, which is which was cool, and we're a little early this week, and apologies for recording so early in the week. Just my schedule got, it's like my schedule got run over by a freight train.
Well, I hope you got the
plate number
on that.
I'm just scrambling to get out of the way, you know, and be able to, you know, live to podcast another day next week.
There you go, buddy.
I'm good. How are you doing?
Next one. I'm doing all right. It's pretty early, even. I mean, not for me, so to speak, but to be speaking and to be engaged with other humans and interact, it's kind of early, but I'll get over it. I'll get back into the flow here.
Does your wife know you're engaged with other humans?
She doesn't listen to the show ever.
Okay. I hear that one. Safety and silence, baby.
There you go. On this week's show, we've got two chats. One with Diane Viciedo of the Chunichi Dragons and the other with Brian Rodriguez of the Nippon Ham Fighters. And we're going to discuss both teams, the interleague winner, All-Star voting, and a whole lot more, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so as many of you know, I went to beautiful Nagoya last week, and for the most part, and spent a couple of days there catching up with some of my basketball buddies, and we had sort of a reunion that was kind of fun. Not everybody was there, however. We had some guys overseas, and they weren't able to get back for it, so that was unfortunate. Well, I was supposed to bring the Wonder Twins, and they came down with a fever and all this other stuff. So it just turned out to be me getting to spend some time at Nagoya Dome on June 23rd, and that opened up a nice opportunity for me to pull off a triple play. So let me explain how this went. I really had no idea who could speak English with either team. I wasn't sure that Brian Rodriguez could speak English, and I knew that Diane Viciedo could speak, but sometimes he's a little bit shy, and so it's sometimes hard to get him to okay an interview, but he was up for it, he was game. And so not only did I get to do the two interviews, but I turned a triple play by going to catch up with longtime listener Naija Gambare. Some of you might recognize the name because she used to send in a lot of questions for us, and used to see a lot of comments from her. But she's been busy, she said, lately, and her sons Michael and Stanley both in college, and I think she's just bogged down with a lot of stuff. So good seeing you, Naija, and nice to meet you, and thank you for catching up with me at the Eon mall across the street from Nagoya Dome. That was really fun. In terms of the two players, so I actually talked to Diane Viciedo, then I went outside, caught up with Naija Gambare, and then went back into the dome and got Brian. Damn. So that's a triple play, man. I'm taking credit for it.
I think you get that. So when our record book is published this year, there'll be an asterisk in the double play column for John's Nagoya triple play on June 23rd.
I think we should just have a triple play column and no asterisk. I don't like the insinuation.
I gotta re-edit the damn thing. I mean, dude,
get to work, bud.
We don't have a big budget here.
I'm adding to your workload that's already crazy. So anyway, I had a little time with both guys, and I spliced together the chats. Viciedo comes first. He's in his fourth year from Cuba, and he's a naturalized American citizen whom I referred to as the citizen, and he won the batting crown last year. And I say slugger, but I think because of some of the home runs he has hit, I mean, some of them have been on some pitches that you just don't think he's going to be able to get out to right field. But he hits for a lot of power, but he hit as high as just 26 in terms of home runs in MPB, and he has lost a number of games working to acquire that U.S. citizenship. So I nicknamed him the citizen. And he played in a lot of games last year, obviously winning that batting title, and he's got his average up over 300 again this year after kind of a, I mean, he had a good, a so-so start, but it hasn't been impressive in terms of the power. So maybe that stuff will come around. As for Brian Rodriguez, he's a second-year righty out of the Dominican Republic, and he's working his way through what we'll call a progressive pitching program at Nippon Ham. He has four starts, and two of them have been quality starts. His whip is 1.17. He has six holds, though, and he also has a save in the 19 outings. So that's a mixed bag that he's going through up in Hokkaido. And it's, you know, what they're asking their pitchers to do is another thing that one day we will ask Masao Kida, whom I saw, and he actually walked right past me, and I tapped him on the shoulder as I was talking
really
to Brian.
He's getting really good at that.
Well, I mean, he walked past me because I was talking to Rodriguez at the moment, and so, but I did tap him on the shoulder, my tap was to say, I'm going to get to you, buddy. We're going to ask about this, and we're going
to get it on
the record.
He wants to do it. He definitely wants to do it.
Yeah.
But he's also, I got this vibe at the manager's meeting in January where I ran into him, that his obligations as coach are things he had not expected. The, oh. The little obligations on his time.
You mean you want me to earn this money? Doing this, all this stuff too?
Before he was a special assistant to the general manager, and he stood around a lot before the games and chatted with reporters, and pretty much no questions from other reporters were too obtuse or
correct. Yeah.
mine could be too obtuse. You know, and leave him puzzled, you know, the eyebrow. But but now he gives you the look like, I'd like to talk, but I don't know where the time is. I've got to talk to all these people. What does this have to do with coaching?
Well, that's what I mean. Just that, you know, you didn't say this was going to be on the list. I didn't know this was going to be on the test. Nobody told me.
Yeah.
I didn't know these were part of my obligations.
Yeah. He's always had a little bit of that vibe. Even when he was a player in his first stint with the Yomiuri Giants, he had a little bit of that.
Well, we'll ask him, like I said, at some point and get a better idea of the plan. But for right now, let's hear from Diane Viciedo and Brian Rodriguez. All right, we're here with Diane Viciedo of the Dragons. How are you, man?
I feel good. Early in the season, I don't feel good, you know? Everything in the season, long season, I feel good, very good now.
Okay, so it's getting warm. Yeah, I know you like the warm. You like the warm weather better, right?
Yeah, more better.
Yeah.
Cold, I don't like cold.
Nobody likes, nobody in Nagoya likes cold weather. So now, you won the batting championship last year.
Yeah.
How did you do that?
My consistent swing is more important, like last year, every day, like my contact, my swing. I feel very good last year, the whole season.
Yeah, you look good.
I'm so happy for last season and like everything, man. Like my swing, my condition, like everything.
So how do you, I mean, your average is over 300 now. So you're coming back. How do you feel about your swing now?
My swing, it can better. I told you, like all of the season, yeah, a little bit of trouble for my swing, but now I got to work hard and like, more better and better in my swing now, you know. I see the land drive more better, and not too much ground ball right now, but you get more liners.
Yeah, early on you had a lot of ground balls double plays.
Yeah, it's not good for me, you know. Like right now, I gotta make a face in my swing, like more comfortable right now.
Now, last year you said you felt good all year, but this year you had to adjust something because they're pitching different. How are they pitching different?
Yeah, every year, every pitcher it throw different for me, you know. Like it throw a lot of more ball
off the plate.
And now I need blanks for right now. Maybe and the one I buy, you have one chance for hitting. Like, you miss it, no more chance.
You're right.
Yeah, more concentration and every at bat and good contact, you know?
Now, Omar Linares, he's a coach. How does he help you?
Yeah, it's pretty good, man. I get more Latin, you know, like he work hard, and me and him, and my swing, my balance, everything, you know, like good teacher for me. Get a more better communication, like what I should do in my swing or my feeling. You know?
So he's telling you about mechanics
and everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Also about
every at bat.
Every at bat.
Yeah, every at bat.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what about Zoilo Almonte and Stephen Moya? They play right on now, the farm, but they come here.
You play good players, but you know now I have a lot of pitchers right now.
You need pitchers.
Yeah, I need pitchers. But, you know, like it's good for him, and now I am mentally now, and like you know maybe no opportunity.
Because you need the pitchers.
Now I need a pitcher right now. You got to only me hit it. And three pitches.
Yeah.
One started, two on the bullpen.
Yes.
But it's tough now. It's a lot of people right now. Four.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more guy. I need sometime hit it too.
Yeah, but you need a
hitter. Very tough.
So you're thinking about the pressure of, you know, you're the only foreign hitter and...
Yeah, it's pretty different. You have Monte in the back. Okay, I feel like... But now, you know, but it's all for me.
Yeah, I thought so. All right, and so the Dragons are having a tough time. You guys maybe fifth place, I think, right now. So how do you win some more games consistently? Is it the pitching? Is it you? You got to get hot?
It's okay. You know, more the team sometimes go down, maybe sometimes up. But more important now, like, consistent in the win, you know. And now come back for the league. And inside league now, like, the thing is very different, you know. Like, the pitcher, everything. Like, I need to come back. I need a more win. You go make a playoff.
Yeah, more wins and make the playoffs. Okay, so what team was really difficult to play against, besides the Lions?
Lions, pretty good hitting.
Yeah. Oh,
good lineup. Sostovan too.
Yeah.
It's very good. Sostovan, Lion can hit. Hit it. Good hit it. Good power. And Sostovan, you have good hit it and good pitcher too. And, you got better defense than this league or the other league. Very, very different.
Better defense too.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, more hit it. He got a swing. You know, take a strike. You made me swing. Like American League in America National League. You know?
Right. All right, so what is the focus for you as you start to go to, you know, second half and All-Star game? What are you going to focus on?
Yeah, my focus.
Batting average, home runs, RBIs?
My focus is my body good, my swing, working hard. Now, the 5 days off now, like, practice every day my swing, like it can be more better in the second half, you know. Like, a little more home run.
A little more home runs.
It's focused. Little, you make it feel good, you know. More like average, home run, RBI, everything.
Everything together.
Yeah.
Everything together. All right, man. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, man. All right. So, we're talking with Brian Rodriguez of the Fighters, and how's your adjustment to MPB, you know, in year two?
Well, I was like kind of different because, you know, I was starting last year and then I come out to over here. I started like as a starting, but I got like kind of a little trouble. So they put me back in the bullpen and I'm like making a little adjustment, like by
maybe big adjustment.
Yeah.
A little big adjustment.
Yeah. So I'm still trying to learn more, you know, about, you know, what is going on, like to be like my first time as a reliever, because my whole career was like as a starter.
Right, right.
So it's my first time, like throw like back to back, like throw two innings, and then the next day throw one inning, you know, and go to the game like bottom line, like tie or maybe for one run, you know, trying to hold the game late in the game,
seventh inning or sixth inning, eighth inning.
And
much different.
And like this year, I had my first opportunity that I closed the game. I did. It was like kind of hard for me because it was my first time in my career, like becoming a closer. You know,
a lot of guys are getting their first tries to get, you know, being a closer or just, you know, closing out the game, including Rydell. Rydell, actually, he did it last year.
Yeah.
At least once. But how different is it?
Well, it's very tough because, you know, like you don't have too much chance to, like you have to close the game, like, fast that you can because you don't have too much chance. Like, if you give it like homer or something, that's blowing out game. So you have to be like very focused and very smart for the detail during the game. So it's, for me, it's kind of tough because, you know, like I never in my career being like closer. So for me, it was a great experience. I don't know.
You like being a starter.
Yeah,
probably more because you're just used to it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's something I'm trying to be like, trying to figure it out, like how to be like day by day to be ready in the bullpen.
Yeah,
in case that they need me. So
it's much different. I always say some of the guys that come to work, but they don't know if they're gonna work or stay on, you know, sometimes maybe the guy throws a complete game, you don't work as a reliever, but as a starter, you know you're gonna throw. So what about being an opener? How has that been for you? Just, you know, throwing a one inning or two innings at the beginning and then having to throw the next day too.
Well, it's a little hard, but you know, it's something that you have to do. But completely very different.
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
All right. Now, what about the guy starting today, Yoshida, the rookie?
Yeah.
You've seen him pitch a lot. What do you like about him?
No, he's pretty young and he's pretty good too. So I think he will be all right because, like, his fastball is very, very hard to catch it for the hitter because of, like spin rates. Kind of like that, but I think he will be fine. He's great key, so he work hard and he do everything he had to do. So let's see, because you know, like, this is his second outing and pro and the major. So I mean, I hope that he's doing well today. Well, I think he will be all right.
He'll be all right. Yeah, he's young. That's for sure. He's really, really young. Now, what about all the other guys? Do you keep in contact with them? Do you talk with them? Like guys like Steven Moya? You guys kind of stay in contact, or you not so much?
No, like, you know, like as a Latino player, you know, we are trying to talk to each other when we have time, you know, like I know Rodriguez because we play together and winter.
He told me. Yeah.
So, you know, this is one of the guys, like, the closest guy that I have, like, over here. Like, Villanueva from
Giants.
Giants. Yeah. I played with him, like, in Triple A.
Okay,
like,
San Diego?
Yeah, a few years ago.
All right.
But, like, as a Latino player, we always, if we have the chance to see they hitting or pitching, we always trying to talk or communicate or say something, like, before the game.
Right. Say hi.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Good luck, man. Stay healthy. Don't get hurt.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Now, one thing to consider is neither one of them is a native English speaker.
Mm.
Really, really were very gracious to take their time and do these interviews in English. And so we really appreciate that. And the other thing I like to keep in mind is because they're not native English speakers, they don't sugarcoat a lot of things, and they get straight to the point, and you, they get in and get out. It's like stick and move like Rocky. So what's some of the things that stuck out about?
Well, a lot. I really enjoyed them, and I want to thank you for going, you know, for attempting your infield wondrous feat there. however, it ends up being recorded in my record book. We'll see.
You better fix that record book.
I know. You won't be talking. If I don't put in the triple play column, John won't talk to me for about 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
That'll be a new record. Okay.
If it were you, yes.
Hashtag high heat.
Ooh, that's a slow burn. Okay. So anyway, what Dion Vicieto was kind of was really interesting. First of all, I'd never spoken with him, so I hadn't spoken to either of these guys. And Dion Vicieto was really interesting. And there's I'm putting up a I was really curious about what he said as soon as, you know, his answer was, I think, a common refrain. You know, they're not throwing me the pitches. He said they're not throwing pitches in the zone the way they did last year. And, of course, now since I subscribed to Delta Graphs and and I'm kind of like a ignorant baseball nerd because I don't really understand. I read a lot of stuff on fan graphs in the States, but I've never really used their data. And I didn't realize that Delta Graphs and fan graphs basically are Delta Graphs is modeled after the data on fan graphs. So people who know fan graphs will know what I'm talking about. And but I use it because it has, you know, the metrics are can be difficult in the sense that I don't understand how they put them together.
Okay.
But they do attempt. They do attempt to measure different aspects of a player's game, different components, and I really like that. And so what I could look at things. I looked at, you know, different components of his at bats, especially of course balls in and out of the strike zone. And I'm not going to spoil. I've got a fairly long dissertation on this that'll be on my website on Monday when you hear this. But basically, two things. He cut down on his swing last year, he said, and that is evident.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he's making better contact. He's hitting the ball. He's hitting the ball better. He's hitting the ball more frequently, and his home run production is down. But my thinking about that is that it's down from last year because we're talking in the end of June.
Correct. Yeah, as he mentioned, it's getting warm, so he's starting
exactly.
To feel better.
Yeah. You know, when he gets all these
the
games, that's right. When he gets all these games in the summer, in Jingu, and Yokohama, and Hiroshima,
and Tokyo Dome, for that matter. Yeah.
Well, Tokyo Dome doesn't change as much as the other parks do, and I think Nagoya might change a little because I've been in there, and it does get warm in the summer. Especially in the early innings. So I suspect that will go up. But the one thing that is noticeable is he made a huge jump last year, not really in terms of his home run production, but in many parts of his game. And what I haven't seen is that the bit about more pitches out of the zone. And I think it's actually the other way around. I think what's happened, I don't want to throw a spoiler out there, is basically the big differences between this year and last year are his hitting the ball, what happens when he hits the ball, which is largely out of his control. Basically, I think he hasn't had as good luck when on his balls in play as he did last year.
Okay.
And the other thing is that the balls that he's hit, his fly balls he's hit, have not traveled as far. A little bit less. And I think that's basically the two things. But it looks like everything he did last year to be a batting champion with with those home runs and that power output he's doing this year. I really don't see any difference, to be honest.
Yeah, that's interesting. When he said, you know, you only get one good pitch to hit in an at-bat, that didn't tell me that they were necessarily throwing him pitches outside the zone. What it told me was that the strikes that he's getting are strikes that are borderline, so that he's not getting the pitches that he got, you know, some of the fat pitches that he got last season. And then there are locations that, you know, even if you swing and the ball's a strike, but you can't do anything with it.
True.
And so he's getting more of the, he's essentially they're pitching him tougher. So
I think that's probably, that's very likely possible. I think that's a likely hypothesis for that.
Well, you know, yeah, that's the way I took it. A lot of times, I think it was Jeremy Powell who once told me every pitch a batter lets go by, they think is a ball. And that's why they let it go a lot of times. So
of course, I've played a few hundred baseball games in my life, and I never took a strike.
But I thought, yeah, it was the way he was fixated on his swing, you know, the talk about his swing, my swing is good, and I'm thinking, okay, well, what are we really talking about here? I mean, I hear guys talk about that all the time, but I think he's talking about four particular zones, for particular pitches,
mm-hmm.
and how he attacks or approaches particular pitches and the swing on those pitches. And, you know, I didn't tell him about the double play record pace that he was on early, but I think he knew, and he seemed, you know, fixated on the fact that he had hit so many ground balls and had hit into those double plays. So I think that
he's hitting more fly balls this year than he did last year too. So it's like, it's just weird. I mean, it's just those things are going to happen. That's part of the variation that happens from season to season. But I look at him as being, to be honest, you know, like I said, he looks very, very, he made a huge adjustment last year, or I should say, the combination of his adjustments and luck. But there's a definite split between 2016 and 17 and 2018 and 19.
Yeah, well, I mean, early on when he was hitting all those home runs, I think the big adjustment that the MPB pitchers made was to just pitch him away. Just pound away, try to get him to chase stuff inside off the plate. But basically, you're going to hit away. And I think his big adjustment was just taking those pitches to the opposite field and keeping them fair, because that was a problem too. You know, it's one thing when you know you're going to get pitched away, but it's difficult to, you know, take that outside fastball. And
yeah, last year he pulled the ball quite a bit less, and this year
same pace,
closer to 2018 than 2017. So
okay, but I think he said it all to me when he talked about the fact that it's lonely in the lineup when there are no other imports out there, and the fact that, you know, he made it very clear it's very tough when the pitching performances that they were having with the Japanese players they were experiencing that at the same time that the foreign core of players, the Rodriguez's, the Martinez's, and the Romero's, when they're putting up performances that are winning games, then the team is probably going to lean toward that situation, especially when there was a lot of instability in the bullpen early on. And we talked about closers and the problems in the second-year closer, Hiroshi Suzuki, being sent down to the farm to work on things, and they just really don't have a lot of pitching that they can rely on in the bullpen. I think they have starting pitching. It's okay, but we'll get into the team in a little bit as we talk about this. But I just think when he tells you, look, I'm basically the only guy in the lineup with a lot of power. I mean, he didn't say the power part, but I think it's understood that he's getting pitched around, and that's part of, you know, only getting the one pitch to hit in your at bat, the Barry Bonds treatment. It gives you some insight, and I think he was even conflicted. You know, I'd like to have another player in the lineup with me, but we need pitching, and these guys are getting it done. So I think, you know, you can you got a little bit of an insight into the inner conflict that goes on with a player. You certainly want to have somebody in the lineup with you. Zoilo Almonte would be great in terms of adding some power and some pop and some just someone who can really handle the bat. But you know, when you're losing games with teams that are coming back from six runs or something, was it?
Yeah, and having a guy in the outfield who is an adventure is not really probably what that pitching staff needs.
Not at all. So yeah, I found that really exciting to listen to and to hear. And like I said, he didn't mince. I mean, you know, they don't have time to mince words. They get right to the point.
I did enjoy it. And then the last thing I'll throw out is I really appreciate the question about Omar Linares, because this is something that I've wanted to actually ask them for years since Linares showed up in the middle of Vizcaya's first season.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he came up and you see him together and you see him. And I was so curious because Linares is such a huge figure in Cuba. Well, he cuts a big figure anywhere, but I mean, he was a legend. He was a baseball, worldwide amateur baseball legend, and finished his pro career in Japan. And I love to talk to him. And so just mentioning him is something I really appreciated.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I every time I see the Dragons, I see Omar, I shake his hand. He doesn't speak much English, and I might fire up my junior high school level reviews of Spanish, but it still wouldn't be any kind of real communication.
Muy buen, muy buen, buen. That's my Spanish.
What'd you mumble there? I didn't catch that second mumble part.
Yeah, well, okay, let's move on.
So let's talk about the Dragons. Yes, they need pitching. I think the running joke with our longtime listener, Coaster Freak, is about Koji Futani, and he's just, you know, he just symbolizes what they've had. They've had guys who they've drafted and had high expectations for who have just kind of not gotten the job done. And we talked about Suzuki, the closer. Good fastball, probably above average until everyone knows it's coming, and then it is average. And his secondary stuff hasn't really been effective enough to keep guys from sitting on that fastball. And he's gotten into trouble, giving up base runners, giving up runs. Then they have this crew of, you know, slurvy, junk pitchers, all right-handed, Shinji Tajima, Katsuki Matayoshi. They're basically the same guy. And then they traded for Keisuke Tanimoto from the Fighters, who's not all that different, just a little bit more straight up with his throwing, more, you know, three-quarter. And then in the rotation, they really have done well, I think, in the rotation, despite Shinosuke Ogasawara's absence. And Yuya Yanagi, he's probably the best of a core righties who are effectively the same guy. They've got Takuma Achira, who's, you know, right-hander, over the top, you know, fastball and whatever. And teen rookie Tatsuya Shimizu, who same kind of, he's got a funky delivery, but, you know, same kind of approach. But the thing about Yanagi I wanted to say, because I remember having a chat with Dragon Soul, I think it was via Twitter, earlier this year, and I said, look, he has no elite pitches. This is a guy who really has to locate. He has to be able to put his just have total command of what he's doing out there. And if he learns that, and if he learns to be consistent with that, he would have success. And little did I think he'd be the, you know, team's top winner at, you know, as we approach the All-Star break here with 8 wins. He's won a bunch of decisions in a row. Shared the lead with 4 other guys, I think it was, with 3 wins during interleague play. And he's really, you know, turned it on. And again, nothing elite, but I think he knows when to mix in the curve. He knows when to go out of the zone. He knows how to pitch in the zone. He's not getting too many pitches over the heart of the plate. I think one of the most entertaining pitchers has been Enis Romero. He's been pretty much effective, but he's entertaining when he slams that glove to the turf after surrendering a home run.
Yeah, well, they lost an entertaining pitcher because when they lost on Elky Garcia, you know, there's nothing to do with the Dragons, but I was watching the Tigers game the other day, and they spent pretty much the entire game focusing on his hair.
That big red.
that red AstroTurf. You know, it's like the... the red colored artificial grass that they have around, they have around the infield at Yokohama Stadium. That's why he said, I like that. Make me look like that, because he's got it. It is distinctive. So they lost a little character with Garcia gone.
Yeah, but they've got, I mean, Yudai Ono has been useful.
Oh, good. I thought you were going to mention his heir. Okay, oh, good.
No. Kazuki Yoshimi up and down with the they're managing his innings and I think he's going to run out of innings soon because of age and attrition, but he won, I think, recently, or pitched well recently.
Yeah.
They've been okay, and I think the Rodomaru...
Well, they've been okay, but you know what I want to say about the Dragons, I can say in pretty much one long sentence, is that essentially their pitching is really lousy overall because they have a 3.93 ERA, which is not the worst in the league because they don't play Jingo. But they do play, having said that, they play in the best pitcher's park in the Central League. And they have an ERA that's close to the worst in the league, and this is the same as it was last year. When your park's helping you a lot, and this has been traditionally true of the Dragons. As people know, I've made this, you know, even 10 years ago when they were still an elite team, mm-hmm. people said, oh, they're pitching and defense. I said, no, the pitching, don't put the pitching in that elite category. It was, with the exception of a couple of guys. So basically they've allowed 75, through Saturday's morning, before Saturday's games, they've allowed 75 home runs, which is second worst in the Central League.
Mm-hmm.
They've issued 255 walks, which is second worst, with almost the fewest innings. I think they're just a few thirds of an innings more than the Yomiuri Giants. So basically, they're doing all the wrong stuff in the least amount of time. And Diane Vicieta's comment about, yeah, the pitching is absolutely right. Moya is doing incredibly well on the farm. Almonte, not so much. But really, this team is being carried by its offense. And so I don't see where those guys would really, you know, Moya could make a difference. But the guys who are keeping that team afloat are the guys swinging bats, especially Shuhei Takahashi.
So I talked about the fact in the CL prediction show about Shuhei Takahashi and the fact that they made him captain, and I thought, you know, let's see how this works out, because this guy, he's not even guaranteed a job, and he did not play well the first month, but he has really gotten it going, and that's good. You're saying the bats are leading, and I'm saying the pitching, it started out really bad, and they've had some guys who have been awful in whatever role you want to call their roles. And they've put some guys out there. Takuma Oguma, they put out in a closer situation or a late game leverage situation. I just rolled laughing. And I couldn't believe they expected to win that game. But I think Tsuyoshi Yoda, the Star Wars manager, he's learning about his team. And I think he spent the first month learning about the team and figuring out, okay, who should I use and put in what specific role? And it cost them some games. And they're bad, and they're in fifth place in the Central League as we speak now, so they're going to go into games on Saturday night, 8 games under 500, and they're toiling. But, you know, they did win those last 3 games. They swept the Fighters the last 3 games of Interleague, and they've looked good at times, and they've competed well. I just don't think they have enough talent, especially on the mound, to get through it. So, yeah, the bats, while I'm not impressed with a lot of the bats either...
Mm-hmm. No, I hear you, but I'm saying that's the part that needs less fixing.
Probably. And they've shown they can compete with the best in the Central League when they operate at full capacity. I think when they were winning some games early, I said, well, this is the best that they can do. So I don't expect it to get any better, and I don't expect it to stay at this level. And it didn't, and they dropped under 500, and they've been there for quite some time, but perhaps they can, you know, if there's some drop off among the teams that are right now in the playoff race, they can make a little run. But I don't see them pulling back into playoff position unless guys, Vecchio, Takahashi, and some other guys.
Yeah, well, Takahashi has been hot. Expecting him to get hotter would require having a fire extinguisher at hand. Basically, what I see is the third to fifth teams as being no, essentially, you pick them. The fact that the Dragons are fifth is the Dragons are fifth, but there's no real quality between them. There's four games or so. They could easily finish third in that group that consists of the Dragons, the Bay Stars, and the Tigers. So I absolutely agree with you. I think, you know, they are clutching at straws offensively, you know, whether it's he's learning about the lineup. But I really enjoy your comments about the Dragons managers because, A, you care. Because, you know, you have a long affiliation with the Dragons and Nagoya and you care and you're looking for answers. And so you pay, you know, you watch that stuff, which I don't with most teams. So I really enjoy that.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about Brian Rodriguez and his interview. So, again, wasn't sure about his English, but he spoke well enough to get his points across. And again, we appreciate it. So what stood out for you in terms of that interview?
Well, first of all, really, he's one of the guys I've been trying to get a hold of, but the fighters come to town so irregularly. And I did, again, my schedule collision prevented me from going to Yokohama last week when they were down there. And I have wanted to talk to him because I was really impressed. Yeah, physically, he's a very physically imposing player. I mean, he's really big and it looks like as soon as I saw him pitch in relief, I thought, wow, this is the guy the fighters have kind of been like, you know, where have they been hiding this guy? Because he's like most pitchers at this level is that when he is, his balance is right.
Mm-hmm.
He looks really, really good, you know, but and the thing with big guys, big pitchers particularly, is the balance is right is a big question. It requires a vast, it's harder to repeat that action. The bigger you are, the harder it is to repeat, as Randy Johnson explained his early career to me once. But I watched him and I thought, wow, this could be fun. And the thing with Brian Rodriguez, and you really hit on it, and he hit on it, is he's a really rare case of a player to come to Japan who basically has never been a reliever in his professional career, with the exception of a handful of games.
Right.
Basically, the guys who come to Japan are guys who, for one reason, okay, we have two groups. We have guys who are basically long-term major leaguers who are looking to continue to be regulars in Japan.
Okay.
There's a few of those, but pretty much right now, the 95% of the guys who come are guys who are up and down AAA majors. Well, he wasn't. He was a AAA guy. But their roles are varying from day to, you know, from almost like minute to minute. You know, we want you as a starter tomorrow. Yeah, we want you as a starter tomorrow. So just stay loose and hang around in the bullpen with the relievers. And then, hey, in the fourth inning, are you ready? You know,
and then when they come in, there's a lot of pressure to get guys out. It's not like come in and, you know, we're not really worried about this. Work on this, that, and the other. No.
Exactly.
You get these guys out.
Yeah, exactly. You're in a game now. Let's see what you can do with a major league ball that you've never thrown before. So most of those guys, you know, they need him as a, well, this mode is changing in the major leagues now. And pretty much as people tell me that basically guys in AAA are groomed as either A or starters or relievers. And they have these pools and then they'll bring them up. If we need a starter, we'll bring up a guy who's been starting. And instead of saying, well, we want this guy to be a starter down the road, we're only looking for spare parts here, guys.
Right.
So don't take that starting thing and, you know, put it in your scrapbook, because nobody wants to see it. Anyway, so he's pretty rare, and a guy who basically was groomed or reserved for some reason. The San Diego Padres basically thought he was going to be a starter and had no future as a reliever, or somebody made that decision, because it's really weird, but you just don't see it. Pretty much everybody who comes here is starter or reliever, starter for a while, then reliever, or starter, or, you know, Miles Michaelis, starter in the, or Chris Martin, starter in the minors, reliever in the majors, right. Reliever in the minors. So anyway, so that was interesting, especially his, you know, his take on it and his sense of, I guess, shock and awe might be the best description.
Yeah, mostly shock. And
you want me to what? When?
Yeah, I wish we had some video, because, as I was telling Jim before we started taping, like I said, I wasn't how sure his English was, and then he dropped the spin rate on us when he talked about Kosei Yoshida. So I think, you know, he could maneuver through the language very comfortably when he wants to. But I can tell you, the smile started out when I talked about just his role in his second year and being here, but it kind of went away when we started talking about his role. And you know, he was brutally honest in telling us it's a tough and it's a huge adjustment. And then pitching, the aspect of pitching on back-to-back days. You know, I don't think that, again, at some point we're going to talk to Kida about this, the pitching coach, but you just get the sense that he's a starter trapped in the bullpen, and you know,
wow.
Talking, yeah.
Well, the fighters, you know, this is what the fighters do. I mean, I thinking about Kida, I think about one of his, one guy who's been his predecessor a few times, Masato Yoshii.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I'm really keen to hear if he's going to tell me. I want to ask him, did you go back to the fight? He was with the fighters, and ostensibly he left the fighters because of the way manager Hideki Kuriyama was insisting his, I don't call it his fetish, with Yuki Saito.
Right, that, whom we've only seen a couple times this year.
Yeah, who everybody knows can pitch, has all the stuff to pitch, but never seems to be able to put it together. I mean,
right.
And you know, using a guy for no understandable reason. And so he split and quit the fighters and went to the Hawks. And then he had success with the Hawks. And then he came back to the fighters. And I think he came back to the fighters basically to coach Shohei Ohtani.
Mm.
Because as soon as Ohtani's gone, Yoshi's out of there.
I think he was in front of that line, not in the back.
I think he was like going, okay, my work here is done. I need no more of this circus, because it's just not, Kuriyama is the ultimate black. I mean, you dissect the Dragons guys, but somebody could write a doctoral thesis on what Hideki Kuriyama does with his pitchers, because it's been like in 2016, you know, it's a masterpiece. And yeah. then you get other years, and I don't mean it's bad or good, it's just it's Akira Ogi Hall of Fame level, difficult to figure out.
Right. And I think that extends to some of the players. And like I said, I wish you guys could have seen Rodriguez's face and kind of looked off to the side. And like I said, you know, a starter trapped in the bullpen, he had to get his first save, which you heard him say was a lot of pressure, was difficult, but he got through it. He talked about the pressure of just allowing a home run while you're out there as a reliever. So it's a process for the folks in Hokkaido, and I think they have to trust in it, like trusting the process that we've seen in other places in sports. So he seems to have fighting this inner battle to get through and you know, be a good soldier and go out and do what he's told and prepare unlike he has ever prepared for baseball before, in terms of, you know, one day he could be a starter as an opener starter. One day he could be a starter. The next day he could be a reliever because, you know, he pitched only a couple of innings as a starter. So it's a lot of confusion. And I think that's coming through somewhat in the results in
Hokkaido. You know, having said that, and I said 2000, I mentioned 2016 season, and it just it popped into my brain, is that we've seen a large number of foreign Nippon Ham Fighter pitchers come, have very solid success despite injuries and all whatnot, and then say, let me out. So 2016, you know, Anthony Bass, who could have been the MVP of the Japan Series, he splits. 2018, after the 2017 season, Chris Martin, who took over the closer's role and was effective despite injuries, he splits. Last year, it's Michael Tompkin, who was pretty much did what Chris Martin did, and he splits. And these guys, it's just a train, you know, people are going, I've seen the circus, I'm good.
Yeah.
I say that without knowing what it is, because I know these guys. I know Chris Martin, that probably is inaccurate in his case, because he told me how much he wanted to stay in Japan. But I just see this trend of the fighters bringing these guys over and getting good work from them, and then they're moving on. So it's having remembered what Chris told me in November, and then in the spring, I think, okay, maybe that wasn't exactly the case, but anyway, it did occur to me.
Okay, well, let's talk about the fighters very quickly. They had an injury to a starting pitcher, which was awful. Naoyuki Uwasawa had a comebacker crack his kneecap recently, so they've lost him as a starter. Kohei Arihara has been great. But I think this opens up an opportunity. Now, I don't think I looked at their numbers. They only have four guys who have made more than 10 starts. So I think that's basically their rotation. They're trying to sneak a four-man rotation through here. But with the injury to Uwasawa, either someone steps up and gets that spot, or they just hand it to Kosei Yoshida, the rookie, whom the Dragons put 5 runs on the other day. I did notice that he didn't look good in terms of getting that fastball where he wanted it to. And he has a really good fastball, but he has to locate it. He can't just throw it over the plate. So anyway, Takayuki Kato probably going to get his share of starts. And I think Yoshida's, since he's a big ticket player, he's going to get his share of starts. And Arihara and Chihiro Kaneko, who might actually get some more innings as a starter.
that's hard. They've been sort of like, well, with Kaneko, they've been protecting his... I mean, first they tried the opener thing, and obviously, despite his saying in December, hey, whatever you want, opening, closing, sweeping the floors, I'm up for it. As soon as they took him out after 2 innings, he's like going, what the hey? I said that, but you didn't think I was serious, did you?
Yeah, look at the way I'm looking at you.
Exactly.
See the way I'm looking at you? Are you looking at me looking at you?
And so he's had games like this. You know, he had a game where he was 5 shutout innings and like 49 pitches.
Yep.
And he's going like, you're kidding me, right? And but, you know, I'm thinking, well, 5, you know, I'm thinking that opens a possibility. Are they thinking we're going to throw him for 5 innings like every 4th day or something and use him that way? And no, we're just going to wheel him out 6 every 7th day and limit his innings to 5. And hopefully he can give us 5, because some days he's been electric and some days he's been... Ah, so this is why Oryx wanted to cut his salary.
Right. I mean, I called it a progressive pitching program. I think these pitchers might have another word for it.
progressive. You say progressive like a Tea Party Republican.
Yes. No, I don't. Yes. No, I'm so confused. Anyway, the you know, I looked it up. The Fighters have 1 complete game this season. Mm-hmm. But there is a team out there that doesn't have a complete game yet, and it's Rakuten of all teams. So anyway, the Fighters are right in line with the specifically trend. They just, I think they've been set. I think we had one last night with Yoshinobu Yamamoto, so that makes it 8 or 9. I think it's 9 now. 9 complete games in the Pacific League, and I think the Central League has 22. So, I mean, it's just different. It's just a different approach over there. But anyway, this team with Sho Nakata and Taishi Ota as the heart of the lineup guys is in the playoff hunt. I can see it happening, but I could also see a severe drop-off with the quote-unquote progressive pitching plan not working out in the second half, and they're trying to force Yoshida out there. They've had to turn to some other guys who probably aren't the most talented pitchers, but they're going to need innings from starters or openers or dudes off the street if they come up with another injury, if they keep seeing a lot of ineffectiveness. I think Rodriguez will actually get his opportunities in the second half, so we'll see how that goes.
Interesting. Now, I see essentially the Fighters as being the Dragons' sort of Pacific League twin.
Mm.
And I don't mean in the sense of the Pacific League also is the third, fourth, fifth spots. Basically, we've got the Hawks who are Hawks and Eagles who are setting the pace, and then we've got three teams who are basically, they could be fifth place in a couple of days. You know, you just don't know where these guys are going to be, and that's the Lions, the Fighters, and the Marines. And there's really not a lot to separate any of these teams. They're all different looking teams, but the point is, yes, they definitely have a playoff shot. Whether they do it or not, it's another thing. They certainly have a lot of talent, whether they can put it together or not. I disagree with the idea that they're forcing Kosei Yoshida out there, even though that was, of course, Kuriyama's MO. That was the perp's MO in regards to Yuki Saito. Oh, wait, did I say perp? That was the manager's method in regards to Yuki Saito. But I think with Yoshida and that fastball, I mean, I just want to see more of it. I want to see him more, and I want to see his secondary pitches, which are good.
Sure.
But he's basically, they've been simplified. I think they actually... This is really vintage Kuriyama. They have a plan. I think they do have a plan for him. He didn't pitch well in the minors, but, you know, I mean, he didn't have good numbers in the minors. Pitching well and having good numbers are two different things.
Thanks.
But he came up, and he's obviously got the stuff. And, you know, I think they have a plan. And I say that because, you know, they let him, apparently he had some input into what he wanted to throw in his first game. And they let him do that, and nobody could touch his fastball. And then in the Dragons, they were just basically, okay, wait, eventually he's going to miss with his fastball, so we just ignore everything except his the high fastballs that he throws dead center, and those are the ones we're going to swing at. And they did a really good job. I'll give them credit. They did a really good job of hitting those pitches. But, you know, that's where he is in his progression. And when I say vintage Kuriyama, I don't mean, you know, the fetish kind of stuff. But what I mean, the way he is with players, he's really, I'm going to go back with weird words, obsessed with, like Shohei Ohtani. And, yeah, when he's got a player, he really has got the Jones for, this guy gets all the attention. And he gets all the planning energy that doesn't go into his general. I shouldn't say that because he's a really smart guy and has all these complicated plans, and his team supports all that stuff. So I don't really want to
supposedly. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to say that there's no plan. It's just no obvious one. But certainly with Shohei Ohtani, it was a case of let's manage the team for what's best for Shohei Ohtani. After 2017, that was the story. It was Shohei Ohtani and his backup band, the Nippon Ham Fighters.
Right, right.
Well, and everybody on the team knew it. It wasn't like any surprise. And when he said, I have to look after my players, what he meant is, I have to look after Shohei Ohtani and the rest of those guys on the bus whose names I can't remember.
Well, yeah, I totally understand that. We'll talk more about the Fighters.
So with Yoshida, I disagree with that. But yeah, I think he's going to benefit. He's really, really going to benefit as being the golden boy
I'm sure he will. We'll get into it.
Sorry for the digression.
We do need to move along because we're going to run out of time here. So making a four-seam transition, we will talk about the surprise of the century. The Interleague Championship goes to the SoftBank Hawks again.
Wow, who would have thunk it?
I know. And it was the eighth time, and I guess Nobuhiro Matsuda was named the MVP. I actually missed that announcement. I don't know why or how.
Yeah, and it was such a big deal. You didn't see the parade on TV?
No, I must have missed that in Nagoya. So congratulations to SoftBank, the eighth time they've done that. And then the overall record was 58-46-4. And you have the run total, that we were so fixated on for a little while.
Because the Central League had a chance to actually outscore the Pacific League for the second time, but they didn't. Final one was 476-449, which... You Pythagorean people oriented will say, well, that shouldn't have been 58 wins, but, well, no, it shouldn't have been, but tough luck. That's how it happened.
Tough luck. So I know it's kind of old news, but my man Shuhei Fukuda hit two home runs at Tokyo Dome, and Tsuyoshi Wada stepped up and won a game. So.
Yeah. I was so stoked because he's just, you know, I say this, oh, he's the nicest guy. There are a lot of nice guys, but Wada's definitely in that category. And I love him, and I was so happy for him. I was disappointed because, you know, the first game he pitched, the Hawks won. He didn't get the win.
He didn't get the win, correct.
But yeah. So I always thought he had won, but it was his first win in a year. It was his first win. It was his first, when he returned the season, it was the first game since the 2017 Japan Series. So it was great to see him and him pitch. Yeah. And pitching well, because when he won, when he beat the Giants in a... You know, this was the interleague finale that clinched it.
Yeah, it was
old slow throwing former ace against 2-time consecutive Sawamura winning Tomoyuki Sugano, who had come back from an injury and looked really really sharp in his previous start. And I'm thinking, where do I go to bet on this game? and here's Wada throwing his changeup, and I'm going, wow. And he threw it, and he loves his two-seamer. He's got an ideological fixation with his two-seamer, and he threw it, and it was actually good. He had some good movement on it, and the changeup, it was nasty. And then he did what he did when he was in the majors, which was locate his fastball, and he had guys swinging and missing at the changeup, and he had people missing barrel. He was missing barrels with the fastball. It was just a work of art. So I loved
game
it
for him. Yeah, the Hawks beat the Giants 5-1 to wrap it up. A few notes I wanted to get to about Interleague. Keita Nakagawa of the Buffaloes, a rookie, ended up leading Interleague in hitting with a .386 average. I thought that was interesting on that. And Tetsuto Yamada led all the sluggers in home runs with 8. For me, the big surprise, again, Yuya Yanagi, the Dragons, with the 1.17 ERA against the Pacific League. And he and 4 others finished 3-0. And Shota Imanaga of the Bay Stars with 33 strikeouts. So I thought those were some... Edwin Escobar also should get some notoriety. He had 10 holds during interleague. There's only 18 games.
Well, he's a big left-handed power pitcher, and he's happy as all. And I was so happy seeing him play in the... I wish I'd gone to the Fighters Bay Stars games, because he started his career with the Fighters. He really never got a chance to play, and they saved his professional career in Japan by trading him mid-season of his first year, 2017, to the Bay Stars. And he's just happy as punch because he's a Venezuelan. He's got a Venezuelan manager who trusts him and throws him out there. And, you know, and he's got good games and bad games, but he's just a really joyful person. And to see him pitch against his former team, where he has apparently had good relationships, would have just been so much fun.
Yep, he's always happy when I see him, and we got to get him on the show again and call him by the right
name. Yes, 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 yes. And I'll say, do you remember when I called you Garcia and Ipe Mizuhara gave me guff for about 2 days about that? So thinking about you, Ipe. And
all right, yeah.
The last thing is I want to mention, and I want to give credit, even though it's half-deserved credit, according to John, for the sponsors of the Interleague tournament is a Nippon Seimei, and who, you know, I give a lot of guff for their monthly, former sponsors of the monthly awards, but they changed the MVP award this year. It used to read a player from the winning team, and they changed it, so now it's eligible to everybody. And
supposedly
Steve Love Marines at Love Marines was saying, you know, not Daichi Suzuki, come on, give me a break. And I, at first my thought was, dude, check the rules. And then I checked the rules this morning and holy Moses, they opened it up to the field. They made it egalitarian. Wow. It's like the French Revolution in NPB.
Well, yeah, they've cracked open the rules, but they got to crack open some heads and change the thinking before that.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So we've got the guys who are doing the monthly MVPs who no longer have a job. And right. So once a year, we get to take them out of the closet and say, pick the guy with the best batting average, which I'm surprised it wasn't, Keita Nakagawa. So.
Yeah, I thought Daiji Suzuki was very worthy of winning the award. Of course, sure. Takashi Ogino also had just as many hits, but...
Or Takeya Nakamura, I mean, Mr. Interleague.
Yeah, with all the RBIs, yeah.
Sure.
So, it was fun. It was a fun session, even though we knew it was going to happen, and it happened. It was fun to watch the drama play out.
Fun, yep.
Yeah, it's always fun.
Yeah.
All right, making a two-seam transition, we want to talk about the All-Star game very quickly, and... you know, my plan before the show was to go through all the positions, but now that I look at the time...
A bunch of people are on the All-Star game. Okay, next. No.
Looks like they got it all right. Let's move on. No. So we got in the Central League, Daichi Osada of the Carp voted in by the fans as the starter. After that, I really don't have too much trouble with the Central League. We've got Ryutaro Umeno as the catcher at first base.
Picked by the players and the fans. I think that's the interesting thing.
Yeah. Jose Lopez at first, Tetsuto Yamada at
Jose second. Lopez, well, the fans picked Kazuma Okamoto, the players picked Jose Lopez.
Yeah, I don't know how that roles with the fans, but anyway,
they're good. I think they're both good picks. Yeah, so I got no problems.
Yeah,
Tetsuto Yamada was picked for both at second base.
Third base is interesting.
Yeah, fans picked Munetaka Murakami, the rookie from Yakult, and the players picked Shuhei Takahashi, which is again, although Murakami finished second in the players' vote, I think that's. You know, that's a good vote. I think the fans' vote is, you know, the fans' voting has gotten better.
Yeah, it's true. I'm
gonna the last
call,
couple
I'm
of years.
I'm going to call me the baby banger since he's still a teenager. The baby banger.
Okay, you can if you like.
Yeah, I think both of those guys are going to play. I'd probably go with Takahashi just because he's been more consistent, but especially defensively. But
well, on his offense, okay, Murakami's fun to talk about because of the home, because he's under 20, he's hitting all the home runs. But
exactly.
If I had to play a guy, I'd have Takahashi out there. Give him credit.
Right. Shortstop, Hayato Sakamoto, no surprise there.
No brainer.
In the outfield, the usual suspects in Seiya Suzuki, Yoshihiro Maru, and Tsutomu Tsutsugo.
Yeah, Maru was added by the players, which was a. You know, I have to wonder if people in Hiroshima really, basically, people in Hiroshima didn't vote for Maru because he left the team.
Likely.
Because here's a guy who's playing really well. He's a two-time MVP, and he finishes fourth in the fans' vote. I'm thinking, okay, what's wrong with this picture? Exactly. Yeah. But the players voted him in second after Seiya Suzuki, so it looks like old times.
Right. And in the Pacific League, Kodai Senga of the Hawks voted in by both players and fans as the top starter. And then at catcher, Tomoya Mori, no-brainer there, of the Seibu Lions. Also of the Lions, Hotaka Yamakawa at first. At second, Hideto Asamura, now of Rakuten, not the Lions.
Mm.
And then third base, again, we have an interesting deal here where the fans chose Brandon Laird of Lotte, but the players went with Nobuhiro Matsuda.
You know, I definitely got, you know, the vibe I got from this, the players' vote?
Mm-hmm.
Was,
no, I don't know.
Okay, well, I'll tell you then. Is, you're too young, take a bend, take a seat.
Hmm.
They definitely favored the older guys. Lopez over Okamoto, Takahashi over Murakami, gotcha. Matsuda over, well, Matsuda and Brandon Laird. He is much older than Brandon Laird. I forget how young Brandon Laird is. But yeah, let's go with the old guys. Young guys, you'll get a chance.
Yeah, you'll be around. Just sit back. In the outfield, at shortstop, we've got Kenta Imami, another mm-hmm. no-brainer. But I thought Sosuke Genda of the Lions. And actually, Eiichiro Mori, because of his offense, probably gets you should get an invite at least. But
hard to say.
Yeah,
because after the players are voted and the fans have voted and they've added the plus one, there's usually only there's a bunch of pitchers because they have to have pitchers.
Yeah,
you know, the managers have to add like. Six or seven pitchers, and then there's usually they only have a choice of two or three position players to fill out their roster, so it's really hard.
Yeah. In the outfield, you've got Shogo Akiyama of the Lions, Masataka Yoshida of Oryx, and then Haruki Nishikawa of the Fighters.
Yeah, and Yuki Inagita, who I'm sure won't play, and who basically I think he's played 9 games this year.
Yeah, got a bunch of votes. Yeah.
Yeah, and from both groups, and he's had he had such an amazing start to the season before he got hurt, because I was doing the outfield assists, and I think in the end of May, the leading outfield assists was 3, and I think Nagito was one of them.
Wow. Yeah, I miss seeing the swing. I miss seeing the defense, everything. So, and then as for the DH, Alfredo Despaña of SoftBank gets the votes from the players, and then Kensuke Kondo of the Fighters got the fan vote, and then there's Jabari Blash of Rakuten, who stuck in the middle.
Yep. Steelers
but I'd like
real
to see
style.
Him in the All-Star game. He's really done well. He has really done
mm-hmm.
well. All right, moving right along, there was a trade this past week. The Yomiuri Giants and Nippon Ham Fighters got together, and let's see. The principals, I don't know.
Well, I think the principle is that Mitsuo Yoshikawa has it in his contract that he can never be traded unless they package somebody named Shingo with him.
So he and Shingo Sami go to the Fighters. For Yoshikawa, it's back to the Fighters. And then Yohei Kaguya, pitcher, and Takahiro Fujioka, another pitcher, go to the Giants. And, geez, I don't even know. We'll just see how this plays out. I'm thinking we just talked about the fact that the Fighters need starting pitching. Maybe they're going to use Yoshikawa as an opener.
It could be.
Well. Yeah, maybe he'll do well back in his old stomping ground.
Well, I guarantee you.
His ERA was around 9-something, and I don't know how effective.
I guarantee you that Kuriyama has a plan, because one thing he's not short of is plans. And go ahead.
No, and?
The other guy's Kaguya, whose trade caused caused a great deal of wailing and consternation from the Fighters American support group.
Well, I think she needs a support group, actually.
Yeah, after that one, well, it was multiple. It wasn't just Deanna. It was a gang. There's a gang of them over there questioning what do we do with our Yohei Kaguya pictures on the wall. You know, that's a big problem.
You just spray paint a Giants.
No, never do that. No, that's sacrilege over there. Okay, so shout out to you guys. We love you. But interesting trade. And I admit it made me think back to the last time that Shingo and Mitsuo were traded in a four-way deal from the Fighters 2 years ago, 3 years ago, after the 2017 season.
Okay.
2016 season, excuse me, the Fighters were the champions, and they made a four-way deal with the Giants that sent Shingo Ishikawa, a minor league outfielder, and Yoshikawa, the former MVP, to the Giants in exchange for a minor league outfielder, Taishi Ota, and a left-handed pitcher nobody had ever heard of, Katsuhiko Kumon, to the Fighters. And I said, Kumon who? And maybe I thought this whole trade was Ishikawa for Ota, but it turned out the Giants basically, I shouldn't be surprised, they had a minor league outfielder who needed time to play on the first team and make adjustments. Well, what a surprise. They didn't give it to him. He's had... So he turned out to be the least valuable. I thought he was the most valuable player going into the trade, and he turned out to be the least valuable player after the trade.
Well, I can tell this to the Fighters fans and the group out there that is mourning. I'm sorry for your loss, but I'm also sorry for your gain of Yoshikawa.
I don't know. You know, I get the point that I want to make of this. Well, you know, one story I said, the Fighters are short of catching, so, and the Giants, of course, have a reservoir of catchers. Mm-hmm. That's true. You know, they just dredge it up and see.
Somebody can hit.
Yeah, they've got too many catchers and a lot of them who can hit. So they're going to send Usami to the Fighters. But I think if I'm the Giants, you know, having seen the last trade with them, the Giants are playing poker with adults who know how to play poker.
Okay. Careful.
Exactly. I mean, it was a deal that it didn't really help the Giants, the last one, because they didn't know what to do with the pieces they got. It wasn't an unfair trade.
Right.
But they're just not positioned. Basically, the Giants, and part of that is the Giants, the fact that the Fighters are probably the best organized team in NPB, but the other part of it is that the Giants are a better team than the Fighters. They have more entrenched, better talent. So it's a lot harder to take a guy and let him develop. The Fighters can do that. I mean, they had the outfield holes, you know. They lost, you know, they lose free agents. The Giants pick up free agents. So Taishi Ota had a place to play where he could work through his troubles and, you know, and make adjustments and become Taishi Ota, you know, right, with the hair and everything. Okay. But the Giants can't do that. So what I'm guessing is the Fighters are going to have a plan for Yoshikawa. The Fighters are going to have some kind of plan for Usami. They're going to get mileage out of both of those guys, and Kaguya and Fujioka are going to eventually move on to some other teams.
Or back to the Fighters.
Or back to the Fighters as part of the loan deal. Yeah.
Right. All right. And our last note as we wrap up here, Joey Meneses of the Oryx Buffaloes was popped for doping. The team will likely void his contract. Now, you mentioned it.
I remember by accident.
You mentioned it. It's a report out there, but it finally yesterday.
Well, one of just to be really brief, somebody mentioned doping. Somebody mentioned doping when I was half awake. I said, this is a story that's got to go out. And so I read the Japanese, and I just had the doping in my mind, and I said, doping. And then people, Claudio in Toronto, said, doping. I didn't see doping. And I'm going, no mention of doping. So I had to go back and correct it. There was no mention of doping in the story. And then people started talking about doping because Claudio said, hey, people are talking about doping in Japan now. And I said, well, people are also talking about doping because I mentioned it. And the way the Japanese media works is if the American media mentions it, they start reporting it. Mm. So I wasn't certain if it was because there were actually issues about doping or because they were reporting that the American media was reporting what I reported. Erroneously.
Correct. Yeah.
Anyway, but yes, he did test. He tested positive for a anabolic steroid, and he said, "I don't know. I've never tested. I don't think it was a good result because I've never tested positive before. But all I can do is say, well, I did."
Right. Right.
Weird denial.
Yeah, he joins a group that includes Yafet Amador of Rakuten last year in August. He got busted Luis Gonzalez of the Yomiuri Giants in 2008, Daniel Rios of the Swallows also in 2008, and Rick Gutterson of the SoftBank Hawks, I guess it was. He was before he went to the Swallows. I can't remember.
It was after the Swallows.
After the Swallows. Okay, so I think I said it the last time, and now I'm really, really seeing a pattern with this testing that I think they started this testing a little bit more than 10 years ago, so right around 2007, this testing program, and all we've seen is foreign guys.
We had one guy get busted for a masking agent, and he get busted, and then they said, no, it's okay.
Yeah. It wasn't. Yeah, and then Hirokazu Ibata was...
Ibata, right, who got...
Yeah, and he was the Dragons infielder who tested positive because of a substance in his eye medication.
Right.
I remember
being
the story. But then they said, no, he had permission, but he forgot to file the papers, so it's okay.
Right.
That's what I remember.
So...
I don't see how random testing... And it's not, I'm not saying that the Japanese aren't 100% clean. They might be. But it's really odd to only find non-Japanese get popped for drugs in random
and
testing.
Then, it's really right. Weird. And then Japanese go to America and they do. They have in the past. Although I think there's another story there. But yeah, is it random? I think this is no proof that it's not random. But I think, it is what it is.
And it's establishment of a pattern for me, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is a pattern so far that those are the people who have been notified.
Wasn't Kazuki Yoshimi also the Dragons? I think during the Japan series at some point, they were questioning his use of garlic injections.
Yeah, he was taking those B12 shots, yeah.
Yeah, but nothing, no one has ever been... You know, outright.
Nobody's ever been banned in Japan because the Japanese guys who've been busted have all been in the States.
Right, mistakes.
No, I mean it's true. I mean, I know two guys.
Anyway, the pattern seems to be established, but we'll come up with a new pattern for next week. No questions this week as well, so get with the program, people, if you can. Send us an email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBWPodcast with the hashtag #HighHeat, or send us a note, comment, complaint, or whatever you want to do on the Facebook page. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark and at jballallen.com.